Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here for the next hour on KLBB Club 1220. Joining me, as I was joined with the last hour, or actually I joined him, Stan Turner of the 12 o'clock show here on Saturdays at KLBB.
What a duo we make, huh? We can take this thing on the road. What do you think?
I think we can do a few more hours. Is there a cause we can be a
telephone? We don't need a cause. This is 2014 going into 2015. Just call our booking agent. Who is
that,
Tom?
That would be Kyle.
Kyle, you
give him a call.
It's been appointed our booking agent, Kyle. Thank you.
We were talking.
Doesn't pay worth a darn.
No, we can get a. Actually, tell you what, we'll get a commission of any new bookings. We'll see how many we get today.
You're gonna starve, boy. You're gonna starve.
That's how much faith I have. We were talking last hour, and we had a great conversation about those that left us in 2014, those in front of the camera, behind the camera, in print. And I was coming up with this list a few days ago. We were talking about this, and unfortunately, there's quite a long list in 2014 that passed away.
Much longer than I am. Thank you for printing out this. I say thank you in quotes because it's painful to look at the great number of our, in many cases, our friends, or at least people we knew by their reputation, who left us in 2014. It's an astounding number.
I think 2014 was a very eventful year for everyone, and I think that there are some important names that I want to make sure we talk about. Some of national prominence, some of local prominence, but one I think that we might agree in talking about is Jim Lang. Jim Lang, of course, hosted The Dating Game. Jim Lang passed away on February 25th at age 81. He was a graduate of St. Thomas Academy and the University of Minnesota. His television career began in the Twin Cities portraying Captain Eleven in the mid-50s on what was then WMIN.
He was Captain Eleven.
Was
Is that
Captain,
the guy?
Captain Eleven. That's right.
Did he have a disguise on? Did he have a mask? I can't remember.
He had a helmet on.
A helmet, of course.
But he shed his helmet and went to California and did this little show called The Dating Game. And Kyle, I have some audio here. I want to play a little bit of The Dating Game in case you forgot what it sounded like.
Dating Game. And here's the star of our show and your host, Jim Lang.
Thank you all very much. You know, now that flowers are about as in as you can get, we're planning on planting a special dating game garden with some appropriate type blossoms. For example, we'll definitely need daisies for young ladies who can't decide which match to choose, and American Beauty roses to match many of our gorgeous gals. And if any of our sentimental affairs reach a serious stage, we should have some orange blossoms ready, I think. Now, while our dating game garden is still on the planning board, the dating game itself is ready to go, and we'll be right back with game number one after this important message.
There you go, the dating game.
From Captain Midnight to daytime television. Oh, there we go.
Captain Eleven.
Captain Eleven. Brother. I'm
that's
sorry.
Right. No,
Captain
it's,
Eleven.
He very
slapped my face.
He very upset. If no, that was. In fact, I was actually Thanksgiving a couple of years ago, and my aunt was talking about she was on a kids show. She's at Channel 11, and I said I think that might have been Captain Eleven.
Captain Eleven.
Mm-hmm. She didn't realize she was in the midst of celebrity with Captain Eleven, soon to be Jim Lang of the dating.
She'll
game.
Have to carry that for the rest of her life, won't she?
I know. Yeah. You were at Channel 5 for a couple of years, and you were
yeah.
we'll call it there was kind of a heyday in the 70s and 80s of TV news before the cable penetration happened.
Mm-hmm.
You were at Channel 5 at the time when Channel 5 was the NBC affiliate, which people of a different generation may not remember. Those of us remember it was a big tough thing for us. Remember when you switched the dial from 5 to 11 to 9, what the network was at that point. It was a big,
right.
It was a psychological challenge for us to be able to do that. There was a lot of commercials and print that had to be printed for us to be able to do that. Don Schwartz, he passed away at age 98 this last year. He was the president at Channel 9 and actually all of United Television. He 98 years old, quite a long time in TV. He took over management of KMSP TV Channel 9 in 1957 and turned it into one of the most successful independent TV stations in the country. Why I say that is because when you were competing against them at Channel 9, it was probably a fair way to say you were not even competing with them at Channel 9.
Yeah, they, as you say, they were an independent. They had a what we call a shoestring news department. It was very small.
They were an ABC affiliate, actually.
They were. Right. But they just didn't have the resources or didn't commit the resources to compete with Channels 4 and 5 at the time. They were very thrifty. And, Tom, I have an anecdote for you. Maybe you've heard this before, but it's true. I'm told this by people on the Channel 9 staff. And it was either this Schwartz or Stu as his son.
Right.
I'm not sure if it was Stu. or Don. But they were looking at the overhead and seeing the news department at that time, which was then spending just a pittance of what Channels 4 and 5 said. They thought Channel 9's news was spending way too much money, especially burning up film shooting sports events. So the guy who was assigned to shoot the North Star hockey games was told to save film, shoot only the goals. Now think about that for a minute. Just shoot the goals. Well, okay. I guess you'd have to have some sort of, what would you call it, special clairvoyance to know when the goals were going to happen. But that was a a laughing stock of the Twin Cities media area right then.
But, no, it's in fact, what and I bring this up not to denigrate someone, but actually it actually turns out is a happier ending for Schwartz and the Channel 9 legacy. They were an ABC affiliate. Schwartz was proud of the fact that he turned a losing station into a profitable station. So while ABC and Channel 9 may have not been a good marriage together, they weren't making as much money as they thought they would. They never lost money. They were not. They never did. He went from a losing station to a profitable station. When ABC went to, I think, KSDP.
I think that would be about right.
Yes. In 1979, I think everyone thought that KSDP, you know, independent stations are dead, they're gone. Well, about that time, cable TV had been invented. Well, not been invented, you know, many years before, but it came to this market. Mm-hmm. And you could actually plug in Channel 9 through the Dakotas, through Iowa, Wisconsin. Right. And you know what a lot of people watched? Sports, cartoons, and a lot of that stuff that was regulated to the independent stations. And Channel 9 made even more money and became one of the most successful independent stations in the country.
They were good business heads. They knew what they were doing, and they were well-respected in the business. And, of course, you have to remember, when you go independent, you're not sharing advertising fees and the rest to the networks. You're not having to send a certain amounts of money every month to whether it be CBS or ABC or NBC to carry their programming. So you have you cut that overhead right there. So the rest of it's gravy.
And interestingly enough, you know, Hubbard, they did pretty well with Charlie's Angels and Three's Company for a while, but
A guy named Fred Silverman was running the ABC entertainment side of the network then, and he had the hot hand, and so NBC was not giving Channel 5, those of us at Channel 5, very good program lead-ins at 10 o'clock, and lead-ins are vital, because if you're carrying a big audience into your news is going to do very well, but when it's not good from, say, 9:30 to 10 o'clock, and a lot of people will be on other stations during that time, and they may stay on those stations for the news at 10, so it paid literally to have a network that delivered good audience to you when you went on the air, especially at 10 o'clock at night with your local newscast. So ABC was the hot network then. They were delivering the goods as far as lead-in and all the rest. And so the Hubbards at Channel 5 said, let's go ABC.
Yep. Something in that era, I think you have to appreciate, you know, where they grew up in. And Schwartz was a young usher at the Ritz Theater. He fell in love with the movies. He bought the Loop and Astor movie theaters downtown Minneapolis, and then represented independent studios which distributed movies. In 1975, he told the Star Tribune that many years of struggling taught him that shrewdness may have some merit. He said the station was losing $30,000 a week when he took it over in the 1950s, $1.5 million a year. He retired in 1983, but continued to do consulting and civic work, which included co-founding a program to help minorities become broadcasters, as well as serving the Minnesota Orchestra and the Minneapolis Art Institute. His quote is saying, you have to pay back a community that's been good to you, he liked to say. He had a birthday party on March 7th. You know, unfortunately, right before, he had a heart attack, passed away. He survived by his wife and his son, Stuart, also of Channel 9, and 10 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren. Quite a legacy.
Yep, those sorts of good corporate citizens here. They always have been, and they carry on their good work here. So
in 2014, one of the news stories, which is why I want to bring you in today. We had a couple of the things I want to talk about. You were a youngster, I think.
Still am, you could say.
Maybe even before.
Stop laughing, Kyle.
Unfortunately, I don't have the context to say when, you know, we went from a country that was trading with Cuba, or they were a normalized country, to one that they were the worst, you know, our mortal enemies. And right now we are going back to possibly being a friend of theirs. And my question for you is, do you think that, you know, what do you think this is going to go with on this? Do you think that we have a Congress right now that I think there's so much politics in play at this, and I'm wondering if it's even more so than it was back in the Red Scare of the 60s.
Well, that's a very good question and a very good point. I think there's still some residue of the Red Scare. Mm-hmm. The Joseph McCarthy era is still around. Mm-hmm. And with the Republicans being in control of both the U.S. House and the Senate, I think you can see some brakes being put on some of the normalization of relations with Cuba. As somebody once said the other day, there's still communists The Castro's still running the show. It's a different Castro now, right, Raul?
And he's not a youngster. I mean, that's...
No, they're right.
It's not a newer, improved Castro. It's actually a younger brother who is, I think, 85 years old.
Right. Young in quotes. Right. It's interesting to note that the Vatican played a leading role in brokering this deal. So, you know, Cuba being, I think, largely a Roman Catholic nation, or a nation with many Roman Catholics in it, despite the fact that it's been under the communist heel for a long time, the people, the good people of Cuba, have clung to their religious beliefs, and the Pope played a leading role in making this happen. He, in many ways, brokered the deal between Cuba and the United States. It's been under the covers for a long time. This has been going on for some time, so a lot of people around the world think that this is a good thing ultimately, but you raise the point politically, it may not come to... We may not be buying Cuban cigars here anytime soon, let's put it that way.
It was an election cycle this last year, and I think the election cycle is now 2 years span. We don't really end the election cycle. The election cycle is going to start again in a month.
Yeah, it never ends, Tom. It really doesn't.
I think at least in the 60s, and I think even all the way through maybe even the 90s, you could go through an election, and then there's probably about a year break before you start worrying about that next election. And I think that the Chamber of Commerce and the Republicans, and to a simplistic term, might have always, you know, might be hand in hand. The Chamber of Commerce has been for the Cuba normalization. I think conservative Republicans, especially those in South Florida, have been against it because of Cubans in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's all these political plays in it, and I wonder if people are going to, what's the pulse of America thinking on this?
I don't know. I don't know that America knows what it thinks right now. I think there's a lot of ambivalence about this. I do know. In fact, a guest on my show 1 week from today here, Gail Rosenblum of the Star Tribune, was in Cuba just recently with her, a couple of months ago with her mother, and said that her take is this will be a good thing, normalizing relations, and she said that is because the people are so poverty-ridden in Cuba. They are in miserable shape there economically. It's not just they're driving old U.S. cars from the 1950s because they're quaint. It's because they can't afford anything, and most of those cars are driven by taxi companies, not by private citizens. So poverty is a very real fact of life, as it has been under the communist heel in Cuba. So from a humanitarian standpoint, you can make the case that this would be good for the people of Cuba.
We've had very few documentaries, local documentaries, successfully gone, go to Cuba to be able to take any films. So I actually was looking the last couple of weeks for some local tie-in. Unfortunately, the Minneapolis-St. Paul market has not had the clearance to be able to take their cameras into. We've had trouble with China, with other countries. But it'll be interesting to see, first of all, if the travel is allowed. I think it sounds like the way they've the law has been established, you can really find any way to be able to justify a trip to Cuba. You'll be able to go there. Now, a couple of things I personally hope. I hope that Americans don't ruin it. I hope we don't find a way to mess up a good thing. And second of all, will capitalist Americans going there, will that change things? We trade with Vietnam, which if you would have thought back in 75, would we ever be trading with a country that we walked away with such...
I have the honor from time to time of being asked to give a little talk to Vietnam veterans. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you that it's hard to look them in the eye and talk and tell them I bought a shirt on sale, a fire sale in Duluth one day, a couple of summers ago. Mm-hmm. Brought it back to the hotel room. I got it for $5 or $6. It was probably retail 30 at one time. Looked at the label, made in Vietnam. And how do I look these Vietnam vets in the eye and say, you fought for this? I mean, it's just a horrible thing. Somebody died and somebody have been psychologically scarred by that war. So now that I can buy a $5 shirt made in Vietnam. It's hard to make sense out of all this. I'm not taking a stand on it. It leads you to wonder, and I always feel badly for the Vietnam vets, too.
And I'm not either, and I only bring this up to bring thought-provoking questions, which is rarity for me, I understand that. But no, that's false modesty. But the Vietnam trade normalization was actually, only about 20 years after the war. Everyone that made decisions during the Cuba missile crisis, they're long gone. I mean, the people that were, there's very few people that were in, in power, whether it be the Congress or any of the State Department that are still there right now, and, we're It was surprising. Did you think that all this is what was going to pop up in December after all this time?
No, I thought this would never. It seemed like, when is this ever going to change? Nobody wants communism 90 miles off the shore of Florida, but it's a failed government system. We all know that. It hasn't worked anywhere. It's been tried. So you wait for the walls to cave in and the place to implode, but I think just Castro's sheer force of will has kept those people in place down there. I understand. You mentioned the Cubans, the exiles in Florida. You know, they're really hot under the collar about this diplomatic move to normalize relations, because they lost everything over there.
Right.
They've been hoping someday they could get their wherewithal back, and that's all up in the air right now. I don't know. I can understand their side of it too, but
it's a very interesting tale. You know, Castro, if you look at his history, he spent time in the United States and New York. He was going to play, professional baseball.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting tale. There's a picture of him laying a wreath at the Lincoln Memorial, and when he came here after he had defeated Batista in the Revolution, he came here to America. And you probably know the story, but Eisenhower went golfing that day, and he sent Nixon to go meet with him. When Nixon and Castro didn't hit it off very well together.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, right now.
Well, I don't know where this is all going. Castro's brother Raul said the other day, we're still going to be communists, so don't look for communism to go away. So.
That surprised me, even though I didn't think anything different, but the fact that they decided to rally that day to say, once a communist, always a communist, I thought, well, that's only going to make the opponents of this in the United States even more defensive to wanting to do this. But
it's that old cliche. We're going to have to wait and see on this one. Nobody has any special monopoly on wisdom when it comes to this. I don't know. This is one that's up in the air, and who knows where it's going.
Second news story I wanted to get your take on as a esteemed newsman. we've poked at this gentleman for years, but our former governor Jesse Ventura. Mm-hmm. It sounds like he is now. Well, I can't keep track now. I know they were appealing. He won an appeal, but now they're the Chris Kyle side appealing again. Everyone last summer who had put their money and their wager on this case was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the defense attorneys made a pivotal error in thinking that the jury was so skewed to their favor. They didn't go unanimous. They went by majority jury, mm-hmm. which went to Ventura's favor. Ventura did win his defamation case, which is almost impossible to win as a public figure, and he's now suing for more money. What's your take?
By choice, I'm not a Ventura watcher. I don't feel that in the overall scheme of things he's important. He was when he was governor,
mm-hmm.
but now he. Again, I said before that he plays the media, and you can only do that when the media allow you to play them. And so he's the newspapers seem to be just they have an absolute insatiable appetite for Jesse Ventura stories. The trial was interesting. If in fact the book was wrong, maliciously wrong about how I characterized Jesse Ventura, that he was knocked down by this guy and all the rest. Yeah, that's bad. That's all right. Then you're on Ventura's side. But when you know all the coverage, good grief! You know, I think stories that deserved a lot more attention, News Inc., airtime, didn't get it because of this. This story forced off. So I'm not. I see the story in the paper. I just turn the page, folks. I don't mean to sound jaded, but I just don't really care. It doesn't affect my life. And, you know, I think Jesse's probably got enough money to get by. I don't think we have to send him a fruit basket anytime soon.
And I tend to agree with you. However, where I differ on this is that he won this defamation case, which I actually think is going to be a precedented.
It is case history. There's no doubt about it. You're absolutely right about it. This will go in the law books here as a case that went a way that a lot of people, as you said, didn't think it would go. So it's established some case law. There's no doubt about it. So in that element alone, it's worthy of attention. I've seen that now. It's come and gone, Tom. So I can just let that one go now.
Well, you know what? Because Plastic Frenzy is so media-driven, we may have some Jesse Ventura audio a little bit later. But that's, I'll tell you what. I
realize it's under appeal, so it's going to go on and on and on.
And
you'll keep it alive, Tom. I know you will.
Well, no. And by the way, there's politicians in the state, some who are not going to be in office any longer. And I've always said, it's kind of like the attack of the 50-foot eyesores, okay? If you stop looking at it, it goes away. If you stop looking at this thing and stop paying attention to this, if you don't like Mr. X, Mrs. X, then just stop reporting them. I never could understand. There was a yeah, there's a couple people in Congress, okay, who are not going to be around any longer, and they got so much press from our print and electronic media. But I just think, why? What have they said? Why is this outrageous? Are you trying to show how ridiculous the statement is to try to persuade the public, or is it entertainment value?
There you go. I think a lot of it has to do with sheer entertainment value, not news value. There's a big difference between the two, and it's big top. It's the big top syndrome. People who come into your tent if you're making a lot of racket and noise and kicking up the dust.
Do you miss having to make those decisions as a news director?
No. It's always difficult it sounds presumptuous of journalists to say, today we're going to decide which stories are going to matter most to the greatest number of people out there. Mm-hmm. Now, who are we to decide? Well, that's part of our job. It's an editorial decision, subject to all of our foibles and failties and all the rest of it. But we do make that decision every day, and it's real easy to fall into a pattern of throwing red meat, to people who just want all the junk and the garbage. And, somebody who's acting out or being a goofball gets too much attention to the detriment of stories like what's happening with that tax bill at the Capitol. Oh, mm-hmm. That's too boring. It's boring until it hits you in the pocketbook. Then it's not boring. Then people say, why didn't you tell us about that?
So you watch watching these newscasts from 35 years ago, or I'm sorry, a few years ago, from Channel 5, even Channel 4, they packed a lot of stories in that. It wasn't all just thrown to ENG or to film. You got a good balance of local government, and I don't say this to think that we're going to go back to that or that life was better, because sometimes nostalgia is only as good as we remember it. You don't remember the bad things about the past. You tend to remember the good things, the things that make us feel good. The past wasn't all good. But to that same token, it's unfortunate, I think, right now, the more we kind of water down our media, the more we have to have instant gratification. Mm. We blast it, and we've talked about this before, we blast it out now, check facts later. There's a couple of big pieces here in town the last few months where I think a perfect example of that was, did anyone vet this? Anyone check this? Mm. I mean, people don't vet spelling anymore. It's much less news stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, and maybe I could reverse what you said, I think people tend to remember the negative when it comes to news story selection.
Mm-hmm.
I used to talk to groups, and they'd say, that story last night is all negative, all blah, 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 negative, negative, negative. I said, well, what about that teacher? We did a four-minute feature last night on the Minnesota Teacher of the Year. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Can you tell me anything about that story? No. Was that in the news? Yes, it was. It was in the first segment of the 10 o'clock news. A wonderful lady from Cook, Minnesota, who did all these things and won national attention. And you forgot that, did you? You didn't even know that was on the air.
All Channel 5 reports is ambulance chases.
They remember the double axe murder and the car chases, So, I think maybe it's more negative, but it's remembered than positive.
I found a little bit here. This is actually, and I'm going to play this for you, then I'll tell you, I'll give the context afterward. This explains the whole story right here. Okay, Kyle? Here we go.
In the late 60s, television news saw the dawn of the team approach to newscasting. Among the participants, conviviality, idle banter, and forced humor were employed to assure the audience that despite the grim pallor of the day's news, there was still room for levity.
Hey, give me a beer.
Yeah, where you been? I've been looking for you. We've been holding that one for you.
In the 70s, because all the frightening news had dried up, there was no need to soften the delivery with such nonsense, and newscasters became more serious. But newscasters everywhere long for the bygone forbidden fruit of the 60s. Promise of a return to the joy of newscasting.
Hi. Oh, boy, we have a bundle of it tonight. Oil leaks here and in Michigan. Wow, a big one in Michigan. Coal miners riot in West Virginia. 50 of them arrested. Sadat tells Big it up yours and goes home. Clumsy Bemidji man loses both thumbs in corn threshing accident. Funny thing about that accident. Oh, this will never end.
There you go. That was the start of it all.
That was Dave. That was Dave Moore.
That was a bedtime news parody of team news. I want to just
might have been over the line a little bit there, sir, in a couple of places. I'd say.
Well, again, that is parody. I don't want our listeners to think that was a real newscast, but what sounds like a very heavily consulted newscast right there. I think we don't have to smile and high five and.
It's a hyperbole and exaggeration of the so-called happy talk that was foisted upon us and in turn foisted upon the viewers. Some of us tried to keep that to a rank minimum as best we could, just a kind of a quick, ha-ha, how are you? But some of this inane stuff continues on. I think people basically want to know what the weather is going to be tomorrow and tell me in 20 seconds.
That's no, 5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes. Last hour, I think I did the weather right in 15 seconds or less. Huh? It can be done if you really put your mind to it.
I think it happened. Stan, thanks for sticking around for a half hour. We'll take a quick break here in Flatfoot Twin Cities. Stan, you're going to be on Monday at 12 after the news.
That is our habit. Yes, the All Request and Dedication program here. We play the tunes that our wonderful listeners want to hear. We do it Monday through Friday, noon to 2.
If you guys stick around, we'll have some more Flashback Twin Cities after this break here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here, solo here for the last part of the show. Every year, WCCO-TV used to do, in the 70s, did a kind of an end-of-the-year tribute to the year. And they did it in the bedtime news format. And I get a lot of inquiries for bedtime news on tcmedianow.com. I only have a few. Not many exist. It was a day before tape was easily saved. They didn't distribute it. And they may not even want us to distribute it. But I do have a couple clips. And the last clip from the history of news with Happy Talk was from a 1978 bedtime news. I want to play one. I've played this before. This is a favorite one, though. So I'm going to play the intro here, and then I will play this weather bit.
The following program is brought to you in part by General Foods Corporation and in part by the Northwestern banks of the Twin Cities area.
I'm sorry.
A fiery host with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty
Happy New Year!
The son of bedtime news. From out of the past come the blundering footsteps of the great newsmakers. Return with us now to those thrilling years of yesterday when a masked man, disguised as a mild-mannered newscaster for Channel 4, fights a never-ending battle to bring news, weather, and sports to the old Northwest. The son of bedtime news rides again. Good day.
First off, I want you to know that from the beginning, I've been opposed to presenting this special.
And let's go to this.
So often I get the question, is Bud Kraling really a weatherman, or does he just read some information prepared for him by someone else? Where do you get your weather from, Bud?
Well, a lot of it comes out of the West.
I mean, all those charts and graphs and instruments you use.
Oh, well, they don't mean very much. I usually call the Weather Bureau.
Call the Weather Bureau?
Yeah, I say, hi there, what's the weather, and I write it down, and then I say it out loud to the folks.
Well, don't you have to study the high and low pressure systems and the occluded fronts and the stationary troughs and all that sort of thing?
Well, they have a way of working out.
But what has the way of working out?
Well, those things, whatever you said, those fronts, those things. Yeah.
What kind of education does one need to be a television weatherman?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, such a technical subject as meteorology, it must require some special training.
Oh, well, just living here in Minnesota is an education in the weather.
Oh, how do you mean?
Well, like in the summertime, I go outside and the sky is dark and I know it's going to rain.
And if it doesn't rain?
Well, then we'd go on a picnic.
When did you first get the idea that you wanted to be a television weatherman?
Oh, I was a lad in grade school, and I'd wear my raincoat, and it wouldn't rain.
Uh-huh.
And then I wouldn't wear it, and it would rain.
So?
Well, I knew I was qualified right there to be a weatherman.
This kind of disappoints, really, to find out that you're not...
Now, I get tired of people talking to me about the weather all the time, really. Why don't you ask me about my hobbies or current events?
What about current events?
Well, I'm not so hot on current events. I never listen to you when you're doing the news. I'm working on the weather.
Yeah, I understand. The folks on the street, people on the street you see all the time, what's the question most frequently asked?
Well, in the summertime, they ask me, is it hot enough for you? And then in the wintertime, they say, is it cold enough for you?
And what do you answer?
Yeah, it is.
There you go. You're even laughing in there.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I admit I play that one twice a year, but it's worth every time I play it. I get a lot of requests for this, and I can understand why. And if you go to tcmedia.com, you can watch these full episodes. I have about three up online. Some are very visual, so you can't play them very well on radio. But Dave and Al Austin and Bud Crowley and the group, they do skits and various bits about the last year's news. It was a weekly series in the 60s. They did it every Saturday night, and that tape is unfortunately long gone, destroyed, thrown away. But nonetheless, we do have a few surviving on tcmedianow.com, and they are getting a lot of hits, so I appreciate people going there and checking that out. All right, next clip. Now, this is one you've also played through, but we had to cut this early when we had a short show one day. And you can brace yourself here. We were talking about Jesse Ventura, and yes, I do probably give him more time than I should, but it's such a fascinating case to me of someone that was a pro wrestler, became governor, and now is on landmark defamation cases. But this is from 1985, and we played this interview a little bit before. We played part of the video. Jesse Ventura on the set of Channel 11 in 1985. Jesse was just getting out of wrestling, and he was trying to get into other media formats, this time rock music. So let's try this again. It's only about 2.5 minutes. I think we can bear with it, but I think you'll at least laugh.
You can see us. We're in a huge wide shot here. You know who this is over here?
I just met him. Shook his hand.
But you've seen him on TV before, right?
Yes, I have.
Well, that's Jeff Passel. No,
that's right.
You know who Jeff is, but sitting with you is whom?
Jesse.
This is the one and only Jesse the Body Ventura.
Absolutely.
Jesse, got to say welcome to you, first of all.
Thank you.
Jesse venturing from the world of wrestling now to the world of rock videos. And, hey, maybe you got to explain why you decided to do this.
Well, the first thing I want to say to you, Passel, is how can you dress like that on a beautiful day like today?
You don't like it?
I sure couldn't. You know, I was just out at Fat Cat Beach, you know, out there, Lake Minnetonka.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where all the fat cats are. You know, the water's even kind of purple out there, if you know what I'm talking about. But no, I ventured into rock and roll real quick. I'll tell you why. Because what rock star can be a wrestler? None. But I can be a rock star and a wrestler. I'm unique.
All right. The music video is called Jesse Ventura's I Got the Body. Let's take a look at it.
The Body Rules.
The Body Rules.
He does it excellent. I mean, I play hockey, yeah. Prolific scorer. I wrestle, number one contender in the world, and I will rock and roll. And we got a major tour coming up. I'm going to sign with Epic Records for a major album this
fall. Where can we get this thing?
Anywhere. Anywhere in Turkeytown, Twin Cities, any of your major record outlets have got it.
All right, they want me to do this, Jesse. We salute everybody that contributes to Turkeytown, as you call it. 11 Country is what we call it. I'm going to give you an 11 pin. What do you think of that? You can put that in your ear, huh?
Yeah, I might be able to do that. Maybe I'll pierce Jack Majors' ear with this.
Let's go back to Jack Majors right now, Kirsten. Oh.
How'd you like that video, by the way? You liked the music a lot.
I think it was good, yeah. I think the kids liked it. It was easy to dance to. I'd give it an 85.
Okay.
An 85.
I don't think Jesse liked 85. I think he wanted 100. Yeah, I had to skip forward the song. I actually, realizing I could not endure the listeners to much more of that than 30 seconds. But if you tell you what, watch the video. It's on tcmedianow.com if you have the bravery to watch it. And, of course, someone did tape this somewhere along the line. It ended up in my hands, of course. It ended up online. One of my most watched hits, actually, my most hit videos on tcmedianow.com in 2014. In 2014, also, Jason Davis of KSDP-TV retired. And Jason Davis is known for his On the Road series, went anywhere from the Middle East. He went to the North Pole, actually, and it was the farthest distance live shot ever done on local TV, actually in TV in general. And I want to play a little bit from Jason Davis, the North Pole. This is from 1986, January, and here we go.
News continues with the team that covers the Twin Cities and all of Minnesota. This is Eyewitness News at 6.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Stan Turner, along with Ruth Spencer. Well, part of the Arctic cold came down our way, south to Minnesota today, Ruth.
Mm-hmm. But there was certainly enough chill left in the Arctic for Jason Davis. He's in the Canadian town of Resolute, Northwest Territories. That's 2,400 miles north of the Twin Cities. He's been covering the beginning of Will Seeger's assault on the ice off Ward Hunt Island, the start of the 500-mile push to the North Pole.
Yes, and we have some broadcast history to make here tonight.
Yes.
We now have Jason live via exclusive satellite from Resolute. That's farther north than any previous live satellite in broadcast history. Jason, give us a little sampling, if you can, of the temperatures you've been enduring there in recent times.
Well, right now, I guess it's about 40 below Celsius. And, you know, the scale changes, so it's probably 45 or something like that below Fahrenheit. But, you know, there's no wind, Stan, and when there's no wind, you can almost stand this. But it's been very cold here. It was 50 below last night with 35-mile-an-hour winds. That was vicious. You know, travel here is really something. Travel in the summer in the Arctic here is difficult. There are no roads. In the winter, it's almost impossible. The Steiger people are traveling to the North Pole by dog sled, but they're spending $60,000 in chartered aircraft just to get to the start.
They are the workhorses of the Arctic. Reliable, go-anywhere aircraft called Twin Otters. Over the past few days, they've been shuttling the Steiger Polar Expedition from weather station Eureka to the ice of the Polar Sea. Tons of food and equipment and 50 dogs. Loaded and unloaded several times before the final destination near Ward Hunt Island, the most northern piece of land in Canada. Yesterday, we were there when the advance party of six began to carve a path through the broken sea ice. This huge field of rubble is the first major barrier on the way to the pole. The task is to get five sleds loaded with at least 1,000 pounds each across this nightmare. Canadian Brent Bodie, spurning synthetic materials, wears a full suit of caribou skin to beat the cold. It's his dogs that have the doubtful honor of breaking trail. Using a selection of heavy tools that includes a couple of axes they sort of borrowed from the Frobisher Bay Fire Department, the team have to cut their way through the convoluted ice. It's back-breaking work that forces them to shed outer clothing even with temperatures colder than 40 degrees below zero. Even a man of legendary strength and stamina, Iron Man Bob Mantell from Alaska, has mixed feelings about the task that lays ahead.
Well, I guess I'm at the same time optimistic and also somewhat...
So I'll be honest, I've been complaining about the fact that they did a dusting of snow last night, and watch this video. They have axes. They are chopping their way through ice up the North Pole. This is I remember this happened. Will Steiger's done a couple of different North Pole expeditions. It's quite amazing. And look at everyone's face. They're ski masks, It makes you think we're in a warm, cozy climate here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with watching that. But that was one of the best pieces of video I think ever done locally, ever, actually. Should take a quick break. We have one more break left, and then we'll come back. I got a few more audio bits, some of the most requested and hit videos of 2014 at tcmedianow.com. We'll be back here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here. And as Christmas wrapped up, we have New Year's coming up. I posted some commercials at tcdnow.com on a couple of former retailers that are long gone. Now, you will not remember this one. I know you will not. This is LaBelle's. And what is LaBelle's? No, it's not Patti LaBelle. LaBelle was a catalog store. And you would get this catalog at Christmas time, and you'd circle things you wanted, and then you would order it, or you would go to their catalog showroom. You would see things on the shelf, you'd point to it, they would then take their paper in the back, and all of a sudden, on a turnstile, would be a cardboard box of the item you wanted, or you'd have to wait a couple days for them to get it from their warehouse. And very few commercials actually exist for LaBelle's. I happened to find one many, many years ago on a tape that we had at home. I posted it, and it really kind of took on a life of its own as far as the commentary and the number of hits. So I'm going to go ahead and play this clip here if you want to hold on here. This is LaBelle's from 1984.
Come to LaBelle's today. You'll find a huge holiday sale. This Canon T50 35mm camera has auto-load, wind, and programmed auto-exposure. The Canon T50 body comes with the Canon 50mm f1.8 standard lens for $174.94. And the Canon Snappy 50 autofocus camera with built-in flash and motor film advance is sale priced at $89.74. Hundreds of great values and gift ideas. At LaBelle, the best things for Christmas are now on sale.
There you go. You have no idea what LaBelle's is, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, check the history books. It's long gone. They were bought by a national company, Best, and then, of course, as sometimes these things do, a national company merges with them, and they all go out of business. But I also, on the TC Media Now, can you tell I'm being a little self-promotion here? On the TCMediaNow.com Facebook page, which you can go ahead and like, I posted some catalog scans to LaBelle's and to Montgomery Ward, and then a good friend of the site, Dave Olson, lent me his LaBelle's catalog, so I posted some of his, too. I think there's some... I really miss the day of being able to take a Christmas catalog and really circle what you want. I mean, this is before Amazon, and you think that some of these catalogs had seen the future, they would have found a way to integrate with the internet, but there was a gap between catalog printing and internet that just didn't quite happen. The Sears and Ward's, Penny's all had big catalogs, and I think that before we had personal devices at our hand, we would circle we want, give it to our parents, this is what we want for Christmas, and occasionally you'd get a couple of things you wanted from that list, and then sometimes you didn't. But so it goes. LaBelle's, one of the few LaBelle's commercials I've ever seen is on tcmedianow.com. All right. Another commercial that it was, I found a great coup to find because I had read about this, was in the early 70s. We talked a little bit about KMSP-TV and their ABC affiliation. They brought in anchors, news anchors, reporters nonstop. They never could find a way to make this ABC affiliation work very well in the news department. And in the height of popularity of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Kyle, you've heard this song before, but it does get requested, there was a duo called Boyett and Brennan, and they did a commercial to get people to watch their news in the style of Mary Tyler Moore. So I'm going to play this clip again. We've heard it a few times before, but maybe some of those who did not listen a few weeks ago had not heard it. Here we go. This is Boyett and Brennan from Channel 9, 1974.
Can two men turn a town on with their style? Can two men take a news show and suddenly make it seem all worthwhile? News is all around and they can take it. Guys this good don't have to fake it. They just might make it after all. They just might make it after all.
Well, you know, history is what it was. And actually, both these gentlemen have contacted me, or actually, I contacted them. They've responded. They're both very very good humor about this, about the spot, and about their time here in Minneapolis, which was a couple years, nonetheless. But they, they weren't too embarrassed when I posted this out to the wide world web. This is one of those commercials that have been sitting in a shelf for a long time and not seen the light of day. Some might say that was for a good reason, but I'm glad you're able to see it again. So, you liking the nostalgia so far? If we keep going a couple more?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. This is a commercial. This is a little bit past holidays, but this also got a lot of hits. You see it a lot, and I'm watching Channel 9 a couple weeks ago, and they have all the station anchors are out ice skating together, doing that big Happy Family thing. I know I'm not going to put the Channel 5 one. But this commercial was on a holiday special that I found, and it's a Channel 4 news team singing as, you know, singing as a choir. There might be some dubbed voices here. I don't know. You tell me. But this is the WCCO news team choir from 1987.
Talent with ours. Join Colleen Needles and Dave Moore in a holiday sing-along at Brookdale Saturday at 7 p.m. Bring a toy for Santa Anonymous and together we'll share the spirit.
Now, I'm not sure what I find more entertaining, this commercial or the fact I could have gone and seen Colleen Needles and Dave Moore at Brookdale in a sing-along. I wonder if they did the singing. But that is that is another commercial that took on several, if not 1,800 hits so far on TCMedianow.com. And this one also, I was able to finally, I actually had some audio sync with this little tape here. I finally got it to work in 2014, this last fall. This is going to be our last clip of the day, I think. But this is from 1979. It was during the Playboy Roller Disco Pajama Party. And there was a news cut-in. And we'll see if our news anchor was amused by what he was cutting into.
Tune for Playboy's Pajama Party with the Village People and a preview of the Playmates of the 80s.
Sunday at 8:30, 7:30 Central and Mountain. Mork's in uniform as a Denver Bronco cheerleader.
I want to assure you that this is a local news cutting. We have nothing whatsoever to do with the Playboy Roller Disco Pajama Party. There is more trouble in Iran. The crisis continues there. We have a story of a Thanksgiving reunion. Two boys in Afton, two small Vietnamese boys, have finally been reunited with their mother, father, brothers and sisters, and an aunt and uncle after 4 years of separation. We'll have that story and more for you. Those of you who've turned off your television sets in disgust, wait about another half hour. We'll be back with the news.
By the way, the show itself, and I've watched it, it's one of those things, it's much like the Star Wars Holiday Special. It's so much, I can't tell if I like this because it's so horrific or if it's actually somewhat endearing. I think it's more horrific, but it's you see these cars pull up and everyone's disco dancing and the Village People show up, and I can see why Ron was not too pleased that his news bit was... this is preceding his news.
I don't know for sure, but I can imagine, like, back with that time, they're probably wearing more clothes than most girls do on TV nowadays.
Oh, I think you're right. You gotta keep in mind the culture shock that might have been going through at the time, but trust me, if you want for Christmas, I'll get this DVD too wrapped up for you, and just make sure you watch it and ask your wife permission before you put it on. Okay, this is a recent acquisition, and by the way, the reason why I want to play this is to show that you might actually have this kind of material in your stash downstairs. So as you're cleaning up the closets, the cabinets, look for these VHS tapes, find them. There's a lot of great history, a lot of good video footage here. This is a very simple promotion from 1977, Channel 9 KMSP, and here we go.
News 9 has an outstanding group of professional reporters and photographers. Their business is communication, and they work round the clock to gather the news and report it to you. And that's not all. We have live telecam reports, and we also bring you a number of interesting and provocative special reports, such as our recent in-depth reports on incest and coma victims. Watch News 9, because if you don't, you're missing the news. Watch News 9.
Well, a lot of people didn't miss it, but that's a great commercial. Random on a beta tape. My deal was in order to buy this beta machine with dials. As I mentioned before, I had to get the tapes too, and they were all too glad to give them to me because they would have been in the garbage. And think of this, you would not have heard that. Our last clip of 2014. Well, Kyle, are you much more educated on the history of media right now than you were a year ago?
Absolutely. I don't know if that's for the better or not, but...
To be determined. I'm sure you go home and talk about this stuff all night long. Hey, any final thoughts, 2014?
It's your been chance. An interesting year. That's pretty much about it.
No doubt. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening this year. It's been a great 2014. Looking forward to hearing everyone's stories next year. We have some good guests lined up for 2015, and I look forward to being with all of you again next year. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBV Club 1220. Happy New Year.